That's all I got.
We did.
I just
we
didn't
did.
Give it to him.
Well, I'd like to open this work session, call this work session to order on the 28th of January. We have a special guest today, Dr. Mike Gillette, who is going to guide us through it. Ms. Sarah, do you have anything you'd like to say when we get this show on the road?
I think the only thing I would emphasize is that this meeting will be as good as you all make it. Dr. Gillette is a gifted facilitator, and he's got all the experience to help you have a great conversation. So I just would encourage everyone to participate as fully as possible.
Dr. Gillette?
Okay.
The floor is yours.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody. It's great to see you all.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me here today. I will echo what Sarah just said. My goal today is to facilitate a conversation amongst you all, and I do have some sort of educational material, but mostly this is going to be a working session for us to sort of get a handle. You see there's a code of ethics in front of you. Later on today, we're going to take a close look at some of the planks in that platform and see what needs to be revised. Maybe we can come up with a document that can help us think about expectations for how we manage ourselves in these offices. But that's going to take us throughout the day. So let me just, I'm going to introduce myself formally in a minute. I'm sort of going to hold off till Mr. Driscoll's back. Oh, by the way, can we be informal today? I'm Mike or Michael. Do you want me to call you Mr. Mayo?
Nope. I think everybody here is fine with it.
We can be on a first name basis?
Yeah.
All right, very good. All right, let's try to keep it pretty informal for the conversation. I've broken today's retreat down into basically three parts. I'm scheduled to go up until three if we need it, but we are going to be very flexible. So if we finish early, we finish early. Sarah said there's no deadline, there's no target. You guys do have a little bit of business you want to do after I'm done. So if I end a little bit early, then you'll get out a little bit early. But we have up until 3 o'clock if we need it. I'm gonna break that down into three parts. We're gonna do some introductions first and some key questions and hopefully get conversation going around some of those opening questions. That's gonna be part one, and we'll see how much conversation you wanna have on that. Part two is going to be a little bit more structured, where hopefully I can get you guys to argue a little bit, and I'll talk about that in a second, about some core concepts of what it means to be on city council or town council, and what your responsibilities and your roles are, and what that does to how you manage yourselves. And that is going to lead us into a deeper conversation about, can we put on paper something that will be a workable guide? This is I'm not sure how many years ago that was written. You all have it in front of you. I have it on the screen. I have little posters we can stick up on the wall. There's a lot in there I think you can get rid of. There's a lot that I think you can combine. There's some things I think could be revised. But we want a much more concise, straightforward document. And so that's going to sort of be the project that we engage in together as a team towards the end of our time together. And then we'll sort of end things and get some comments and figure out where we are and what the next steps for you all might be. So that's very roughly the agenda, and nothing has hard start and stop times. So we're going to let each part of this flow as much as it makes sense to you all. Sarah, does that match well with what you have in mind? All right, well, we've already decided we're on a first name basis, so as far as I'm concerned, you're Michael?
That's correct.
All right, you like that better than Mike or Mickey?
Mike's fine.
All right. I grew up in the Northeast where no one cared that much about their names, like you were your name. Then I was a college professor over at Randolph-Macon Women's College, back when it was a women's college, and everybody had multiple names, and they cared very much. Like if you were a Pamela, and you called them Pam, they would freak out, okay? And most of them went by their middle names. It was a very strange sort of change for me, because I'm weird. I always sign my name Michael. On anything official, it's Michael. But if I put my hand out to say hello, it's Michael. And people get really squirrely about that. But apparently, you're like me. You don't care. It's mostly Mike,
yeah.
Never Mickey.
Yeah,
my parents call me that. All right, so let's do some introductions. Let's start with me, and then I want to hear much more about you guys. Just so you know who I am and what I bring to the table. Again, my name is Michael. I have over 30 years of experience working in the field of applied ethics. My PhD is actually in philosophy, believe it or not. And I do work mostly with hospitals, healthcare organizations running their ethics committees. Since I've had experience in local government, I've been doing a good chunk of consulting in the area of local government ethics. I served 12 years on Lynchburg City Council, met some of you during that time in that capacity. I spent 4 years as mayor of the city. And as I've mentioned, I've worked with many local governing bodies. I've done a lot of educational work, but specifically I've done policy work with a lot of local governing bodies, including in-depth analysis of budgeting ethics. So we talked about how do we set priorities, you know, where I always tell groups that your budget is probably the most ethical document that you have. And I don't mean that it's ethical or unethical. I mean that it is the best indicator of your ethics. You can tell me all day long what you actually care about, but if I want to know what you really care about, all I have to do is look to see where you're spending your money. So I've done a lot of work with local governing bodies on how to manage the prioritization of resources when we don't have enough, assuming there's a couple of big projects that I've worked on. I was principal consultant to the city of Richmond on a project entitled Restructuring and Reimagining City Council. City Council was worried about how they operated, and I don't know if you all follow Richmond much, but you do not want to be like Richmond when it comes to your local government. They have infights that you wouldn't believe. And so they wanted to sort of restructure and reimagine how council works, what are the processes it follows, any structural changes that needed to be made, and I was the lead consultant on that effort. I also have co-led council retreats for other local governing bodies, locally or close to locally. I worked with Stanton, I worked with Appomattox. And in a couple of those, I worked with someone with whom you might be familiar, but Kim Payne. Kim Payne was the city manager for almost all my time on council in Lynchburg. He retired just before I got off council, and I led the search effort for his replacement. And we actually selected Bonnie Severcek. I don't know if y'all had come across Bonnie much. But I worked with Kim on council for almost 12 years, and he's invited me a few times to help him co-lead retreats. So that's me. That's what I bring to the table. There's probably more, but that's all that's really relevant, and I don't want to talk about me a whole lot more than that, unless anyone has any questions. What I'd like to do then is set a couple of ground rules before I let you people start talking, all right? So there are two basic ground rules for how we're going to get through the day together. First of all, engage. This will not be useful if you don't open your mouths, if you don't jump into the discussion, if you don't get some creative ideas out on the table. I live in the world of ethics education, and so I always tell my groups, you don't even have to believe what you say. You can learn a lot about a position by trying it on for size, seeing how far you can push it, right? Sort of play with it from the inside, and then you'll see, are there any valuable points here that I want to retain? What are the bad points I want to reject? So I don't want people just saying what they already believe. I mean, it's fine. I'm not saying you should not say what you believe. Make those arguments. But in addition to that, we need to get out of our own heads. So I want you to feel free today to experiment with different perspectives, different points of view. Even if ultimately you're going to reject that view, it could be very, very helpful for the purposes of the group to put the idea out on the table so we can dissect it a little bit, so we can argue about it. And I use the word argue in a constructive way, okay? You're stupid is not an argument, okay? That's just yelling at each other. An argument is a logical process where we move from premises to conclusions with rationally defensible steps. 2 + 2 = 4 is an argument. If you believe in 2, and you believe in plus, and you got another 2, you have to believe in 4. You can't not, right? No matter what language you're speaking, or you know, we can correct for that. 2 + 2 = 4. That's a conclusion that follows from a set of premises. That's an argument. So today, I invite you to argue in the spirit of intellectual advancement, all right? So ground rule number one, engage. You don't have to only say what you think ultimately is right. But if that's true, no grudges. This is ground rule number two. I'm inviting you to play the devil's advocate. I'm inviting you to try a different perspective on it for size. I don't want anyone saying, oh my God, did you hear what Dwayne said today? I'll never talk to him again. He's such an evil off. I mean, you might hate Dwayne for all the right reasons, but don't hate him for anything he says in the session today. All right? Those are the only two ground rules. Open your mouths and engage. Feel free to experiment. Okay? And no grudges. And I would say for any of the folks in the back of the room who don't have to just be passive observers, there might be times when you actually want to chime in, ask a question, make an argument. That's all well and good. You're in the room too. But I do want to point out that this environment is a place where we can play the devil's advocate. So what should not happen is that some quote gets taken out of context and used outside of this meeting in some way that is completely misleading. All right? So we have to be able to have that security with one another. Those are the only ground rules. Anything else, Sarah, you want to add to that? All right. I want to learn a little bit more about you. Let's start with just the first few questions I'm going to put up here in a second, just to get the basic stuff done. And then let's go around the table a second time with the last four questions that I have on the slide I'm about to show you. Okay? This is going to be your chance to start to talk. I want to hear more about you. I've read little bios on each of you. I've read a couple of newspaper articles on you as a group. But I want to hear in your own words what you think of yourselves. So I would like, whoops, did I lose? Oh, I'm out of battery. I have some replacements. I want to know your name. I want to know where you grew up. I want to know how long you've lived here. I want to know how long you've been on council. And I want to know why you ran for council. Let's just do those first. Then we're going to go back around the room, and these are the substantive questions. And this is going to take a little bit longer. What do you see as the most important goal of the current council? Maybe start thinking about that. What do you identify as the biggest challenge or problem facing council right now? So I want to hear about that. And I really, these last two questions, I want to spend some good time on. What would you most like to reinforce in how Amherst currently does its business? In other words, what do you think is a strength that if you had the power to really advance, that you would say that's something we need to continue and that's something we need to invigorate? And then, what would you most like to change about how Amherst currently does its business? Okay, so what do you see as a challenge? What do you see as something that needs to be changed? Now, I want you to notice that these two questions are very much about you and council, right? Strengths and weaknesses or challenges and opportunities for council, as council. The second two questions are broader, right? This is about the town. So we're going to have to figure out how we connect what the town does with what council does. But I want you to see these two questions as a unit, and these two questions. All right, let's just do the easy stuff first. Name, where you grew up, how long you've been here, why you run for council, so on. Why don't we start over here? Go ahead.
I grew up in Amherst, Virginia. I lived in Amherst a lot of years. I grew up here, went to high school here, joined the military, ended up in California, came back home, lived in Florida, lived in Texas, back home to take care of my parents. I've been on council, doing my third term of vice mayor, third term of council member, back number of years, I'm not sure.
Hard to remember.
Yeah.
All right.
Is that complete?
Well, tell me why. So you told me where you live and where you grew up, but tell me why you decided you ever wanted to be on council.
Because I grew up in this town, and I love this town. The town has treated me good. I've had a great life in this town, and I wanted to give back to the town. And I wanted to my part is helping the town to be healthy, run smooth, and just be a great place for people to live and other people want to come to.
Okay. Excellent. So there wasn't a particular issue or event that sort of sparked your interest in being on council. It was a more general, you love the place and you want to help it be better.
Yes. No particular issue. Just wanted to do my part and help the town to be as best as it can be.
Excellent. Okay. Jared, you want to go next?
Sure. Jared Martin. Grew up just outside of the town, about a mile outside of town. Except for about 8 years, I've lived in Amherst County, Maryland, Tennessee. Been on council about a month almost.
Okay, congratulations. So,
thank you. And just the reason I ran was just it started out as just kind of a joking conversation, you know, with several people, and then it kind of just felt led to actually pursue it and just to give a little bit different perspective and a little bit of age diversity and.
Okay, so some friends basically were saying, "Hey, man, you should be on council," and being as young as you are, you wanted to stick it to the old folks.
I would say it's kind of young, though.
Well, you said you wanted to bring age diversity to council, so
probably young.
Excellent, Michael, or Mike, sorry.
Either one. I grew up in Lynchburg, a little bit in Bedford County. I've lived in Amherst for 33 years, been on council for 2 years. First time I ran for council was because I just could not believe something was happening. A council member who had been basically impeached turned right around and ran for council again. And I couldn't believe that was happening, so I ran as a write-in, last-minute write-in. And then a couple of years after that, I ran again, and ran this last time too. Was re-elected. Most important goal of current council.
Well, hold on then.
Okay.
We'll come back to those questions. Okay. Let's just start. So it's interesting that you actually were prompted to run for council because of a situation.
Yes.
So you're sort of like just general. You were like, it just seemed like an interesting idea. Friends sort of suggested it. And you also thought you could bring a perspective maybe that wasn't here. I heard that in what you said too, is that you wanted to bring some diversity of thought, not just diversity of age, to council. But you ran because you actually saw something going on and you said, I don't like this. This should not be. All right. And have you been satisfied since you've been on council?
Okay.
Yeah? Good. How long have you been on total?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. All right. Very good. Next up.
Okay. My name is Ken Watts. I grew up here in Amherst. I was here for about 6 to 6 years. I've been on council, huh?
Oh,
how long have you been on council? About 12, maybe 13 years. Why did I run for council? That's an interesting question. My entire career was with the town of Amherst. I served with the police department for 33 years. I served as chief of police for 18.
Okay.
During that time, the town became a part of it. I felt in some ways like I owned the town, although I knew I didn't.
Right.
But I felt like it was my town. Everybody knew me, and I knew everybody, and I just felt a need to stay connected and become a different part of the council. I mean, of the town than what I had been, and it's been a rewarding experience to do that.
Excellent. So, are you the longest-serving member of council now?
Probably yes, currently.
Okay, so you've got some institutional memory,
oh, yeah.
Which is valuable.
I was telling Sarah yesterday, I have to go back to the minutes to look up something, and it's uncanny how I can go to just a time frame in my mind and go straight to the minute book and almost find instantly what I'm looking for.
Wow.
He's the only one who can find anything in the minute books. The rest of us search the PDFs.
You actually look at paper?
He goes and he pulls the minute books out of the safe, and he could within 5 minutes can find anything.
Wow.
In the, he is the institutional memory. That is
okay.
True.
Okay, well, that's a valuable thing to have. Sort of puts you in an interesting spot, though, because you might feel some tension between, come on, man, we gotta shake things up and do things differently, versus, no, wait a minute, how did we always get that done? So you could be on either side of that fence.
Well, I have been, but I'm not stuck in old ways. I'm open to new ideas and new ways of doing things if they work.
Good. Excellent. All right, very good. Let's move on.
Dwayne Powell, I grew up in Campbell County. I've been with Amherst since January of 88. Been on council 8 years, and why did I run? I ran after I retired. Especially my last 12 years of my career, I stayed gone so much and kept a very low profile because of what I was doing. So I thought I wanted to give back and get involved in the town. I lived here for so long, I raised my family here, my kids, and so I wanted to give back and get involved.
But no particular event or issue that sort of drove you to council?
No.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent. Excellent. Let's get into the deeper questions then. And note takers, let's make sure we get some good notes going. We might put some things up here. But let's talk about the next two questions that I think are council oriented. Okay? You know what? I'm going to swap it. Let's start at the general, and then we'll move to the specific. All right, so let's talk about the town in general, and then we'll talk about what works and doesn't work maybe on a council. So the two questions now, the last two, I'd like you to each answer, and we'll go back around the table so everyone gets a chance, and then we can even have some back and forth. This doesn't have to be a, you know, take your turn and then shut up kind of thing. What would you most like to reinforce now, and how Amherst currently does its business? So I'm looking for something that you would say is positive. Okay, so tell me something good, not just the trees are pretty, okay? Something good about how the municipality, the local government, and I don't just mean elected officials, let's talk about, you know, your career professionals, so to speak. What is something that's happening in Amherst right now that you think is a good thing, and if we had any power to do anything, that's where we should reinforce. We want to make sure that continues or grows. And then, so we'll start with the positive, a negative. What would you most like to change about how Amherst currently does its business? And again, I'm talking about how Amherst as a political subdivision gets its business done. Is it missing something? Is it doing something in the wrong direction? Is it doing it but not doing it well enough? What would you like to change if you could pick one thing in terms of how the town manages its business? We'll go back around this way, but I'll also moderate some healthy debate or argument if that comes up. So everyone will get a chance to say your positives and your negatives, but you can also interact around these. So, Dwayne, do you want to start us off?
Well, let me ask a question.
Sure.
Is how we do business, is that like the day-to-day operations, or is that how council does business?
No. These two questions will be about council.
Okay.
Okay? So, if you're wondering about how council operates, save that for when we go here. I want to start with the general, which is just sort of a snapshot of what you feel is great about Amherst and what you think needs improvement about Amherst. Okay, I mean, no place is perfect.
Right.
And I don't know if there are any particular challenges that any of you see that need to be overcome. So these last two questions, which is what we're gonna start with, don't have anything, well, I was going to say they don't have anything to do with you as council, but that's not true. Obviously, council is going to impact all of this. But I'm thinking bigger, okay? Amherst, the outside view. If a tourist picks up Southern Living and reads about Amherst, what would you want them to see as a strength? And what you would hope might change to turn it into a strength? Wayne, do you have anything?
The way I'm looking at this, the last question, my answer to the last question would go with the first two up there that we have to do with council.
Okay, so you want to, what you would change about how Amherst local government works is something about how council works.
Yeah, and the perception that the public has.
Okay, let's go with it, run with it. Right. Give me a positive, give me a challenge.
I think as a positive, we've got, you know, we're a nice little town, we're friendly, and we're welcoming, you know, it's just as a town. If you're looking at the snapshot, it's like the old southern town if you go down Main Street.
Okay.
What would I like to change or whatever? I think our, especially our business recruitment, which goes up with council, we're getting a reputation of saying no to business.
Okay.
And, We need to reach out and become more friendly to businesses. It's not the fact the businesses are here. We do what we, you know, whatever's possible to keep them here. No, that it's the people coming here. And I just think that we're not right now. I think we see the need, but we're not active enough. We don't really have a plan where we can go recruit. I know Kenneth, I've been out trying to recruit. Danny Wegman's the president of Wegman, he didn't call me. I was trying to get a warehouse. They ended up putting it in Richmond because they wanted it on 95. But, you know, we tried. I think we need to figure out a little bit more how to get the businesses in here. You know, we need to keep growing. We need to get businesses in here which help with the town economy, which helps, you know, add for the biggest thing we hear in town is we want a new grocery store or we want different kinds of restaurants or a nice restaurant. We've even talked to Sheets, we've talked to Wawa. We don't have the exit traffic. Well, my argument is, well, if you put it here, we'll have the exit traffic, but they want the exit traffic. And I think if we can increase our businesses and stuff like that, outside business, we've got an industrial park, all of that stuff, if we can increase that, that will give us our exit numbers. So I think we need to find something that's going to make people exit.
Okay. All right, so you got, do we have some note takers back here? So I'm hearing a couple things in what Dwayne just said, and I'd like to hear how other council members react to it. First of all, I share your pain. Being on council for as long as I was in Lynchburg, we worked hard at recruiting businesses, and we also learned it doesn't matter what you say. If you don't meet certain demographic formulas, they're just not interested. There's an interesting puzzle there about how much energy, how many resources do you put into trying to recruit things when you just don't meet their metrics, right? Like when Lynchburg hit 75,000 people, we're pushing about 80,000, it was almost like, oh, something magical happened. Like all of a sudden, chain stores that we had never heard of before were like, oh yeah, we want to look at that market. So one of the questions, of course, is going to be, how do you find that balance between utilizing resources efficiently, but also not losing opportunities to recruit? And I see some heads nodding. You know, you can jump up and down in a clown costume, and you know, Kroger's just not going to open a major supermarket on your rotary. But that leads me to the question that I actually want to get some feedback from some of the others on. Dwayne, I heard in what you just said first of all, I like what you said. I agree probably with all of it, right? That you like the small town feel, you like the friendliness, right? You like the sense of community that Amherst Town now has. And at the same time, you want to jumpstart business. You want to somehow recruit more commercial interest and some retail, right? I'm wondering, what do the rest of you think? Is there a tension between those two? You start building a whole lot of business, you're not a small town anymore where everybody knows everybody. You want to be Mayberry? Mayberry doesn't have a big, warehouse. So, again, this is the way we argue when we talk about these things. Both great ideas. Is there a tension between them? And if there is a tension between them, how do we balance that? What's the right balance? Does anyone else share any of these concerns and want to chime in on that? Jared, you were nodding your head there a little bit. What do you think?
I agree with everything said. Though I don't have the inside perspective from the outside looking in, it's exactly that. It's a hard to do business with, and no one seemingly wants to look here.
So piggybacking off of what Dwayne said, if you were to flesh out, because Dwayne was basically saying we need to do more in recruitment, right? We need to work harder to try to attract the kinds of businesses we want. And you noted, you don't just want anything. You want something that fits with your character, right? So we got to make that work. But Jared, you've at least sharpened something that maybe Dwayne said, which is you feel that Amherst has, if not a reputation, certainly gives off the appearance of not being particularly business friendly.
Correct.
How's that?
It's a, I'd say, fairly wide perception that you have to fit into a very exact box of, what something can look like or what something can be. And it's, some of it's because of current things that are in place, rules, policies. it's just the perception of it being harder here than somewhere.
All right, well, but I want to hear that a little bit more. If anyone else has an example, let's put it out there, because what you've said could be one or the other of two things or both. One thing could be design standards, zoning standards, that sort of stuff, which is, are we too restrictive in, you mentioned, appearance? So if a big business did want to come in, are you going to tell them, well, the building can't be more than this high, and it has to be this far off the street, and no parking lots where, out front, although that's all changed now. They used to want parking lots here and there.
We got an industrial park, right?
Yeah, but that's in its own place.
Right, so they built it to be,
Yeah, but one of the things that Jared mentioned is sort of design standards, right? Like, are you too strict in your zoning or your design standards? That's one possible challenge. Another possible challenge is when someone goes downtown to pull a permit to do something, they get hit with so much red tape, they can't even think straight. So are you suggesting that both of those things are hard, that staff is hard to work with, and that the standards are too high? Or is it one or the other?
For me, I have no experience or no direct knowledge of anything about the second part of it. Like, as far as the town, like, you actually go up there to do the physical process, that I don't know about, but the first part.
The first part.
Staff is wonderful. I mean, they work, they go over and above working with somebody. I'm sorry.
So you don't think citizens, when they get to town hall and ask a question, that they're getting a bad experience?
Oh, no. Staff is great. It's some of the zoning ordinances and other rules in place that they have to follow.
Okay.
We're up against another issue also, I think.
Okay.
Like, the population, they want stores, restaurants, and different type of business here that we don't have, but they don't want developments to come in that will allow our population to put us in the area where we can get things.
Yeah, that's the tension. Yeah.
They're fighting what they want, they don't even know it. Somehow I wish they would learn the facts more. And if they want to learn the facts, they need to come to a town council meeting.
Okay.
You know, you're out there talking, but you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know why. You don't know the issues behind this. And you know, why we can't get the brand name, the certain Applebee's or whatever.
Right.
You know, but if we allow the development to come in that you're kicking against, it put us in a higher population bracket, and then maybe we can get some of these things.
Right, but then you lose maybe some of that small town feel, or at least that's the word.
Not rapidly, but we can grow slowly.
Okay.
You know, we can grow slowly to allow the town to grow slowly by still increasing population, but keeping control on the amount of growth and the type of growth that we allow to come here. We have a small town feel, low crime rate, all this sort of thing, family-oriented town. If we allow this type of business to come in as we develop, we can keep a friendly town and not grow more than what we want to grow.
Well, and you said smart growth, right?
Yeah.
And so, smart growth.
Yeah.
So, if I'm switching to you now, and I have to still come back to you, if you were to list sort of what you think is a good thing that you'd reinforce and something that you'd like to change, one of the things I hear you just said is that one of the things you'd like to change is the public's understanding of the issues, that there's a disconnect there, or at least they have contradictory views, and you said not really hearing the facts.
Right.
So is that, I'm going to use this word even though it's a negative word, I don't mean to accuse anyone of anything, but is that a failure on the part of the town in not communicating well enough the basis for its decisions, or is that a failure on the part of the citizenry for not asking the right questions and not going to look for the information that's relevant?
I think it's on the citizens. Why do I say that? Because we have our own website that we give them an opportunity to find out what's going on, what we're looking at, and everything. They really, as a whole, generally, I don't feel that they're taking advantage of our website to understand the movement of government in the town. And they don't come to the town council meeting. You know, they're not doing their part to see what we are doing in this town.
Okay.
Yeah. But one thing I would reinforce is, I know this is a nightmare for council sometimes, but I think it's a good thing that the businesses are touching base with each other and discussing how they feel about certain things that we're doing, and at least they're doing that point.
Okay.
You know, so I like that, how they touching base. We can't stand that, what they're doing. They're stopping everything. It costs us money. And then they're doing great. They're doing great. You know, this sort of thing. I think they are, the town businesses are beginning to communicate with each other. And that's a good thing, even if it causes us a problem sometimes, you know, because they come at us in the wrong way.
But, okay, all right. But you see it as a positive that the business interests are coordinating the conversation. So if you were to reinforce anything, do you think it would be reasonable for the town itself to organize a forum for the businesses to discuss their issues as a group?
I'm puzzled about it. Would they come to the forum? They don't come to the council meeting. I'm puzzled about how can we get them to know the reasons why things are being done, the reasons why things are not being done.
And do you feel that economic development is having good conversations with these businesses? I mean, it might not be council directly. It could be, you know, other boards and commissions that you put together that do it. So an EDA.
No,
that's not where you want to go.
No, I mean, what I'm saying is I don't think they're doing a good job.
Okay.
Of connecting businesses.
Okay. So that, we're going to let you piggyback off each other. So Ken, you would say that one of the things we'd most like to change about how we do business is to beef up our communication with local businesses?
And recruitment. I mean, there's almost no recruitment effort being made by our EDA. As far as, as a matter of fact, they're discouraging business. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are on the wrong track there with businesses. I agree with Mayor Togan. We have a negative perception of how we feel about businesses. We're being perceived as business unfriendly. Part of that is because some of the rules that are in place have been enforced, and they should be. But people have become disgruntled, and through that disgruntled attitude, you know, tongues wag, things happen, people get perceptions. And I think that's what's going on, but we're not doing enough to recruit business or to communicate with our existing businesses. And I'm not talking about staff so much as I am about some of our boards and commissions not doing what they should be doing. And that's a little bit blunt, that's the way I feel.
Today's the day to be blunt. Mike, I'm not sure how you your eyebrow went up a little bit there. Do you agree or disagree with Ken?
For just overall, we are on the verge of possibly getting a new business, a good-sized business. We are on the verge of housing developments that have been proposed, and they're kind of stalled. We need to kind of fix those. I think a lot of our issues come from a town council from 20 years ago, who apparently had this vision of here's what things should look like, you know. Everything in town should be asphalt paved, and it has come to light that, God, that's very expensive, businesses that come in can't do it. Small businesses.
You're talking about something as detailed as how many parking spaces a business has to have. In a park like this, like for every square foot of commercial space, you need to have X number of parking spots.
But also the asphalt requirements for parking lots in general. You can't have a gravel parking lot. You've got to have an asphalt parking lot.
Okay.
It can't be surface treated, which is perfectly viable option. The big businesses, local businesses, have come to us and said, you know, this is killing us. And I agree with them.
And why haven't you changed it?
Everybody is reluctant to change.
We've tried.
It's here it is, it's in writing, you know, and it ain't going to change. Whereas I think there's time to come in with a broom and let's sweep a whole lot of that stuff out of that.
Well, there's nothing stopping you.
Well, yeah, it is. We've addressed that issue twice, and now it cannot come back. Well, it cannot come back for a year from October.
Well,
so we can't even bring it up again until October.
No. But you addressed it.
Right.
So the council decided not to change it.
At the current time.
Okay, so you could change it. You just chose not to.
Right.
Okay, and so now you'll take another whack at it, maybe in a year.
Maybe.
Okay, but it's different to say that you can't change it. That's different than saying you didn't change it, right? I mean, if it came to council,
right,
and you couldn't get a majority to vote to change your zoning requirements, then that is the voice of council, right? Council decided that it wanted to retain those standards.
And it's a 3-2 vote.
Well, that's still a majority.
Yeah, that's still a majority. Yeah.
Right? I mean, so that was the will of council.
Yeah.
Okay. So I understand a procedural issue.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have people bring in the same petition constantly. We've already, you know,
right.
Question asked and answered, time to move on. So I understand there's a procedural requirement there, although you could vote to change that.
Yeah,
that's not in state law. That's your own operating procedure. So if you decided am I wrong about that?
No, you're correct. Staff is just supportive of the waiting period just because.
Oh, I'm supportive of the waiting period.
For the business
as well.
Of council to continue on, that waiting periods help keep the business of council moving.
If you don't have waiting periods, you can perseverate over something until the cows come home and you're not making progress on anything. I am not suggesting that I don't like waiting periods. I think it's a good rule. But my point would be, it is a rule of council. So if council were to decide, we need to change this rule, or we need, now this is where things get dangerous, we need an exception to this rule, right? That's dangerous, right? Because then you have to ask, are you playing favorites? Are you doing it for one, not doing it for another? All the reason why a rule needs to be considered a rule. But let's just be clear. It did come before council, according to your rules of procedure. You decided you didn't want to change that rule, and now you're going to live with it for at least a year.
Right.
Okay. That's important for me to know. Jared, how do you respond to that? I mean, what do you think? This is a very concrete, thank you for bringing up a very concrete example for us to sort of argue about. So where do you fall on that, Jared?
I don't think that council decision who's interested. So it was less people were satisfied with that decision. I mean, everybody wanted a change in that department or that area, and so a lot of people still don't like that.
But only a select group came forward and voiced that. And that's therein lies part of the problem. People need to speak up and appear.
Which, Andre, you were talking about before.
Yeah, exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, that the public is somewhat disconnected. Right. Well, until they're upset about something, and then you hear about it nonstop. Although, I got to tell you, Andre, when I was on city council, my fellow council members used to complain constantly about every time they went to Kroger, it would take them 2 hours to get through because people were stopping them and wanting to chat about this, that, the other thing, and so on. And I didn't have that problem. And when I thought about why I don't have that problem, it was because, actually, I did have that problem, but it wasn't a problem. People would come up to me in the store and say, hey, Mike, what the hell were you thinking? You know, why'd you do that? And all I had to do was say, well, I understand that you have a different perspective, but here, let me explain why I voted this way. Boom, 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 boom. And the citizens would invariably be like, oh. I mean, maybe they even didn't disagree or didn't agree at the end, but they quickly realized this was not some irrational choice that was made, and I could get through Kroger in a reasonable period of time, maybe longer than if I weren't on council, but still a reasonable period of time. So citizen engagement is very important, but not necessarily, this is interesting, Jared, you said a majority of the people didn't like that decision. Well, guess what? The people don't get to make that decision. Council gets to make that decision, and a majority of council made that decision. So that's the real decision. So then you have to ask yourself one or the other of two things. Either council is three things. Council is completely out of touch with what the people want. Because maybe we need to change some of the members of council. Maybe that's why you ran. Or the people are wrong and council is right. Okay? But then we owe it to the citizenry to explain why what we're doing. Right? Or council made a mistake in this particular one, and we've got to find a way to hear the voices that matter, because council should do what the majority of the people want. But government doesn't always do what the majority wants. Go ahead.
I have an issue with that.
Yeah.
Why should council do what the people want if the people are wrong?
That's a fair question. I mean, obviously, your council decided that at least the people who voiced concerns about parking lots, I'm not going to say that they were wrong in the sense that they did not have a legitimate concern.
I feel that the council should do what is truly in best interest of the town, whether people want it or not. Sometimes the people don't know what is in best interest of the town.
Jared, how do you respond to that?
I think it's give and take. Because if you always go down one track, it's like always and never. You always go down this one track, then you're just the percent. Even if you're right, and what should be best, the perception is going to be so awful that everybody's mad. And though you can't please everyone, everybody's going to be furious.
Well, you know, because the citizens don't necessarily get it wrong. Sometimes council gets it wrong. You know, it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
And the citizens may think that they're right, council may think they're right. It may not be the case that the council's always right or the citizens are always right.
Yes, look, we as a council have to listen to the citizens, because as a council, we can't make a decision totally all the time on what we think. We have to see how it affects the town people also, and we have to hear that side, and then we're going to have to determine what's best for the town, because what's best for the town is, and really it affects the people too. It's got to be what's best for the people of the town.
So it's entirely possible that a business interest is going to claim your building requirements are killing me. I can't afford to pave this parking lot, and it's not just paved once. It's upkeep, right? I mean, repaving these things takes money over time. So they could be right about that. And so your intuition is going to be, we are strangling business. Because I've heard from businesses who tell me we can't stay in existence if we build this parking lot. You come back and say, that might be true, but there's an overriding reason why this requirement actually makes sense. Might not make sense for you as an individual business person, but it definitely does make sense for business overall in the town. That's a job the council has to do, right? So council can't just listen to one particular group at any given time.
No.
It has to balance competing interests.
Amen.
All right, and your concern is citizenry doesn't always understand that there even are competing interests. They see it from their perspective, and they don't want to see anybody else's perspective.
And I find that since I've been on council, before I came on council, questions and issues were so easy for me. Man, I got
sure.
But now that I'm on council, you can look at it and you say, whoa, he's right on that. Then you look over here and he's right on this too. And the complete opposite.
Right.
And they're the complete opposite. Now we got to find out how to deal with it. And it gets complicated sometimes.
So if we go back to this and try to make this a little bit more concrete, and we have a really good example here, what could Amherst do to try to improve that dynamic? If and I don't know if all of you agree, I think that there's a little bit of a consensus here, that there's a disconnect between the decisions that council makes and the decisions that the staff make, and the perceptions of the citizens. What could you actually do to improve that? I mean, you already said you have a website. People can call you, but they don't. What could we do? What should be done about this? Or is this, we're just going to wring our hands and say, woe is me, I'm a politician and nobody understands us?
I would like for more people to get involved with the town council meeting.
But that's a wish, so I need to know how you make it happen.
Change that.
I wish I could tell you.
Well, I brainstorm a little bit.
Yeah.
But coming to meetings is only one thing, right? Coming to meetings,
yeah.
They see a debate, they see a vote. That's not really true engagement. So what is it, a business forum? Is it better communication on the website that describes the nuances of the decision? Is it a recognition that there were two sides of the argument? Is it open office hours for the mayor? What does anyone have any ideas? Seems to be that you all agree that is a challenge. Any suggestions, concrete suggestions about what you could do?
I don't know how you change it. What Mr. Higginbotham is talking about is people want to whine, they want to complain, they want things their way. When it comes to getting out and actually doing something about it, it's worth trouble.
Exactly.
So you have
to change it, I don't know.
So you have to read their minds. Or better yet, you just have to have a diverse council that represents all different constituencies so that you can all share with each other different points of view. How often do you guys actually debate?
Sometimes, right often.
Well, you remember Richmond?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
we've been there.
It really depends on the
the issues, but if it's a hot button issue, there's a lot of debate.
And all the points of view get expressed.
Oh, trust me, they all get expressed.
Then do we have a problem here?
It doesn't get expressed in a constructive way.
Yeah,
no. That's why we're here.
All right. That's why we're here. All right. So let's push on. Let's move on. First of all, I want to make sure everybody has a chance to answer the last two questions on there. We didn't quite get all the way around, or I cut you off maybe when you were in the middle of it. Who else wants to say anything about what you like and would reinforce, and what you think is something that needs to be changed? Ken?
I think what I'd like to reinforce about the town is our staff is extremely responsive to the public. Now, the public doesn't always get the answer they want, but the staff is, you know, bent over backwards to respond to them, to answer questions, to, you know, make them feel like they matter.
Good.
So I think staff is one of our biggest assets. And I think they need to, and they will, they'll continue to do, because we have just a very impressive workforce.
Do you think the council respects the staff appropriately? I mean, you're saying nice things about it.
I do. I think the council appreciates staff. I think we express that fairly often.
Yeah. Okay.
To the in meeting, publicly.
Yeah.
So I would hope that they know that we appreciate the work they do and we recognize what they do. Because without them, we would be nothing.
Well, and you also have a council manager form of government, which right. means that even your mayor is not running the day-to-day business in right. the city. You have professional staff who are worried about, you know, making sure the water turns on. So,
right.
And you think citizens appreciate staff?
I think, yeah, for the most part, they do.
Do you think that council's giving sufficient resources to staff in order to make sure that this continues?
We rarely turn them down on anything.
Okay.
One thing that bothers me in a way is I think we need to change the way we respond to the complaint of one or two people. I think the complaint of just one or two people have too much power in that town.
Interesting.
Yeah, that complaint of one person that constantly calling us, the complaint of two people that constantly calling us, and it is for the best interest of the town that is personal, but yet and still, we have to respond, and I think we respond too much because of that.
I can see that. I understand that. Jared, that caught your attention. Do you agree with that?
Yes. That's, though, you know, you'll never satisfy everybody, but bending to just one, if noise and hustle and bustle bother me, I shouldn't live in the city. But, I mean, not that you're trying to discourage people, but it's, you know, living in a town comes with, so it's, you know, the one or two people that just keep after, you know, change, making everything a problem, it seems like it's no stopgap for that. It's no, you're just a problem.
Well, to cover right there, and I think I know where you're coming from with that. Some of these people are making these claims or complaints or whatnot, and when they are consistent with what the ordinance says, staff has to enforce that. When it's not, they don't. And I think what you're referring to is it's gone both ways with that one, and I know what you're talking about.
Right. So it's good to enforce, but we shouldn't delegate new ordinances or whatever.
Yeah, you can't have one person make council spin its wheels.
No.
Because you have one concern.
Yeah.
On the other hand, one concern could be a very valid concern. And the minority sometimes sees things that the majority doesn't. So
yeah.
We don't want to just turn a deaf ear because it's a small number.
Yeah.
Right?
No, well, right. I agree.
The dilemma we're having is we've had a problem with particularly one person who has picked through our zoning ordinances and our different regulations, and then they're seized upon that and making complaints based upon research. It's a personal vendetta, and they're using our codes to do it.
Okay.
And that's something because
but the code itself is okay. It's just they're weaponizing.
Yeah. some parts are okay, some parts are not, but yes, they're weaponized.
That's a good word, weaponized.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And staff has no choice. When individuals come up with a valid code violation.
Right, they have to enforce
they it. Have to act on it.
And I want to give props to our town manager. She's doing a good job at it.
Oh, she is.
She's doing a great job.
She's taking so much crap.
Well, you need to make sure all the crap flows in her direction. I mean, that's she is the crap catcher. That is basically her job. but
I never looked at it like that.
It's true. I'm not the dog catcher. I'm the crap catcher.
You're the crap catcher. I mean, to some degree, I think it's reasonable as council members for you to be able to say to a citizen, I mean, you're effectively saying it, but you need to be able to say, you know, you're complaining to me about this. My answer is, there's a legitimate ordinance here. I can't make you a promise. I'm one member of a council. I'm not going to promise to you anything. I'm not going to change the ordinance because you told me to. At some time, you have the responsibility to end the conversation and say, talk to city staff. They will enforce the rules. Done. Right? Like, there's nothing more to talk about. It's done. We used to get complaints all the time. My neighbor's tree fell onto my yard, and they won't clean it up. And so the city, you have to go in, and you have to make them clean up the tree that fell across the fence. And my response to that would be, I'm sorry, that's an issue between two private property owners. The city has no standing whatsoever to clean up that tree and fix that fence. It's not a public problem. That is a dispute between private individuals. Now, if the tree fell into the right of way and was impeding traffic, well, then the city has a responsibility to do that. I don't know how skilled you all are at drawing those sorts of distinctions. Because that I don't know, Sarah, how well that works for you as a crap catcher, but as a council member, it would work very well for me. I mean, they were upset, but I would just tell them. I checked with the city attorney. City attorney tells me that this is a private matter. There's no public standing to even get involved. Hire yourself an attorney, but I can't be it. Let's keep moving, though. We gotta really keep moving. Has everybody, I don't know how many notes you got, but has everybody answered these last two?
Because I haven't done the last one.
The last one. All right. Give me the last one.
The last one, in my opinion, I'm very much with what the mayor said. We are becoming, be it justified or be it not, we are becoming seen as unfriendly to business.
Okay.
And we need to change that perception, and I don't exactly know how to go about doing that. I mean, one business, for example, wanted to have a rental business, and they were required under our ordinance to put up a fence. Well, I'm not saying that I disagree with that ordinance, but they didn't like it, and they created a lot of misperception because they didn't like that ordinance, and they picked up and moved their business out of town. Okay.
So we lost that.
But that's the type of thing that when somebody doesn't like the rules, they're giving us bad reputations.
Sure. So there are two issues there. We should make sure that they're distinct and understood distinctly. Mm-hmm. One issue is the rule a good rule or a bad rule? Okay, so requiring a fence for right. A car rental business, do we even need that? So that's question number one, that people might object because the rule is just a bad rule.
Right.
But the other thing that I've heard much more from businesses than we don't like your rules. I mean, yeah, people squawk and moan about that, so we don't like your rules. But what I've heard, help me if you have had a different experience, is that what businesses don't like even more than that, a rule that they just disagree with, is not understanding up front what the rules are. So they come in, they buy a plot of land, they're ready to put in their car rental business, they thought that they knew they had to pave the parking lot, they're getting all set, they're going for their business license, and then at the very end it's like, oh no, you have to put up a fence. And they're like, what? I mean, I got through the whole planning process, no one told me I had to put up a fence, now I have to put up a fence. So predictability is key for attracting business. They have to know what's expected of them up front so that they don't feel like you're doing a bait and switch. And then what you actually expect of them has to be reasonable. But I think those two things are different. What are the expectations, and how well are we communicating the expectations so that they can move smoothly through the process, right? They walk in, they get their permit, they get their building built, and there are no headaches. Sarah, what's your experience? Are, when you try to recruit business, are you hearing more just bad fit, which is you're not big enough, we don't want to go there? Are you hearing your rules are draconian and we can't possibly meet them? Or are you hearing it's just really hard to work with small towns and we don't even know what to expect?
Yes, yes, yes. And it really is, in all of these kinds of situations, it's different things. I mean, the mayor and Mr. Watts absolutely did a behemoth effort to go out and actually try to recruit on the grocery store front, on kind of a bigger gas station. We have two gas stations in town that are owned by the same dude. So there is no price competition in town. So, I mean, there's been like real conversations. Can we get a Sheetz? Can we get an Aldi? Can we, you know, on these right. kind of things? And they've done the work. We don't meet the metrics. That's one category of thing. The equipment rental business, that man just wanted what he wanted. He's a nice man. He's a good electrician. But when he came in and said, I'm going to put up a business for to be an electrician, there's a set of standards to be an electrician. And he paved a parking lot, literally paved the parking lot. That wasn't the issue. But then when he said, oh, I want to do equipment rental, there's a different set of standards. And he had not had that conversation, but he didn't like it. What he wanted to do is be out in the county, go buy an existing house on an existing highway with an existing commercial entrance, and just be able to park his stuff outside. We weren't consistent with what he wanted to do. And personality-wise, he's kind of one of those people who wants to go like, rah, 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 it's the town's fault. Dude, I sat down and talked to him. I mean, I met with that guy probably 5 times to explain to him the different nuances of the ordinances. This is a challenge where he kind of wanted to just be able to go set up shop.
Right.
And I appreciate that as a business person. I honestly could have told him from day one that he was going to have a hard, and I did actually tell him, you're going to have a hard time on that lot. It is a very small lot. It is right near the traffic circles, so you're going to have a hard time getting your VDOT entrance permits for things as you expand. You're going to have challenges with the size of the lot, with the way that that is going to enter into the VDOT highway system. This is not an easy lot to develop. Like, I said all of those things to him, and he just had in his mind, I'm going to be able to put up a metal building and go to town, and I'm going to have my equipment parked out front, and it's going to be great. And I'm like, you can't just park your equipment out front.
Yeah.
Like, so that's one of those things. And then there are legitimately things where people are trying to do things and the ordinances, they're either non-conforming or they slipped under the radar. There is one business in town that we're kind of talking about some of the issues here. There's a mistake that I made when I first got there and I didn't catch something on the paving. And so now I'm going back. It's a vacant lot. It's got a building, but it doesn't currently have a business. And I'm like, you have to bring in a compliance before you issue a zoning certificate for the next business. So there's some of each of those.
When was the last time you did a comprehensive review of your zoning ordinances?
I have no idea. Long before me. I mean, we recodified, but I wouldn't say we did a comprehensive review.
Like
we recodified.
You guys want to work on
think
the next year is to actually dig in and redo the zoning ordinances.
I think we need to look at it.
Yeah. Well, staff would do all the prep work and
right.
bring to you a report as to where the stress points are, what's out of date, what haven't we not looked at for 20 years.
I think the bigger problem is just what do you want? The council is going to have to get unified on what they want before staff can redo a zoning ordinance to meet that. Because, I mean, the paving example is a great example of councils all over the map, and it doesn't really, I would say from a staff perspective, it does not do us a lot of good to say, hey, let's redo the whole zoning ordinance. If council and the planning commission can't get on the same page as to what the vision is, parking lots are a great example. It's a great example. Should a parking lot have landscaping? Should it be paved? Do you need to have landscaping islands? You know, how many spaces should you have? Is it in the front? Is it in the back? Is it on the side? All of these things, the surface of it, everything, is a great example for what are the standards that you see as a council should be occurring. I don't want to do a comprehensive rewrite of the zoning ordinance till they can get on the same page about what their goals
but
are.
There is a chicken and the egg problem there. Because we did, when I was on council, a massive zoning ordinance overhaul. And we went back to basics and worked through the entire ordinance to keep what we wanted to keep and revise what we wanted to revise, jettison a bunch of stuff. Council can't come together on a vision like that unless council knows what's involved in the vision. I mean, parking lots is, that's one example. Setbacks. I mean, there are all sorts of things that you have to be thinking about. So until staff bring, and maybe it's an iterative process, staff's going to have to bring to you a list of issues that come up in the zoning ordinance. You're then going to have to debate, how do you want to balance my small town feel against my business recruitment? Then you can get into the actual writing. Well, the staff would then develop a draft, and then you would all debate about it and vote on it. But I don't know, Sarah, if they can possibly come to a conclusion about their vision if they don't know what their vision is a vision of. So do you all feel that you know all the sticking points in the zoning? I mean, have you read the zoning ordinances as council members?
No, we don't know all the sticking points. We know some of them.
Some of them. The ones that loud people are griping about. So it might be that we need at least a briefing from council, from staff at some point on... Let me give you an overview of the zoning ordinance. Let's take a half an hour in a work session and have your city planner, your town planner, just say, here are the core pieces. And then you can have a debate. I don't know if you, have you done that? You've not done that?
No.
We have done that on some specific issues. So like surfacing, we had I did a whole PowerPoint on what was legal, what wasn't legal, how we got there, what do you like. I mean, we had a pretty good... And I think that's part of the reason that we haven't come to conclusion on something like surfacing, because I'm not sure that the vision is set amongst council, which is why you've got this kind of 3-2-3-2 back and forth, and they haven't been able to come to that really solid conclusion because.
Well, I would suggest, and we have to move on. We're burning time. I would suggest that a 3-2 vote is a conclusion.
Right.
I mean, we might be upset that it was a close call, and 90% of the time your votes are probably not that close because they're routine things that everybody can agree on. But a 3-2 vote is a vote, and it's a conclusion. One of the things we have to talk about today, then, which we will, is your role as council members. Once council has voted, that's the voice of council. So what do you do as an individual council member if you were on the losing side of that vote? Do you continue to muss up discontent? Or do you say, well, I made my arguments, I lost that vote, it's time to move on to the next issue. And not get stuck in that mud puddle of issues that have already been asked and answered. So that's gonna be a segue for thinking about council. How does council currently work? And this is where I really want to go, so we're going to pick up the pace. How does council work or not work? Why don't we start on this side this time? You want to go first?
Okay. Which one do you want me to deal with?
Both of them. What do you think is the most important goal of the current council that you think this council needs to be working on? And what do you think the biggest challenges facing this council? So, and I mean, in a sense, it's both the same question, just asked flip side of the coin, right? So what should this council adopt as a goal of something positive it wants to achieve? And what is the biggest challenge or barrier to making that happen?
Well, first I see the council had a problem sometime because we need to set a goal and understand that if they're not going to go our way all the time. And we had some issues come up where they didn't go the way certain council members wanted them to go. So to me, certain council members got off track and began to slander and belittle other council members, which to me is totally out of order. You know, and this is something I want change within the council, that we've got to realize that it's not going to go our way all the time, but be man enough, woman enough to let that go and say, I did the best I could to try to go this direction, but let us not become angry, hold a grudge, and belittle and slander our own council members throughout the town, and even place it on social media. This is not how professional government should respond. We don't look good like that. That's not a good look for the town, not a good look for the council, anything. That type of behavior needs to be changed first. That's my opinion.
All right, well, that's going to be a major part of our conversation throughout the day when we start looking at the code of ethics. So one thing that you're seeing is a lack of a sense of teamwork on council and the willingness of people to be disrespectful towards one another. So you would want to change that.
Yes.
Mike, do you agree or disagree?
I'm a little bit befuddled, but in the case, the big case that we're kind of talking around is, we didn't agree on and voted accordingly. However, when it comes up to election next time, don't shirk from the way you voted.
So you would see some of the communication that Andre perceives as being disrespectful as merely holding people accountable for their votes.
That's
so
right.
So they'll, next election, everyone should know this person voted this way.
That's right.
Jared, where do you come down on this?
I think the most important goal is just to unify, because it's a lot of, it appears to be a lot of just infighting and can't agree, you know, deadlocks on issues that perpetuates this, of, you know, not being together and just, you know, kind of a pattern of, that wouldn't be.
So all three of you, well, I'm not sure about Mike. Two of you are concerned about unity on council, mutual respect on council, being perceived as a functioning team, even if within the team you disagree. Mike, you don't see that as such a problem, that there's partisanship in politics at every level, and there's nothing wrong with letting the voters know who voted what way. Of course, they all know that.
The news. And the problem come in is when you're letting them know that, you're not doing it totally truthfully.
So honesty is an important.
Yes.
Well, I think Jared would probably agree that if you're going to be a unified team, you've got to be honest with each other. Right? Ken?
Now,
how
can you say that when the only thing is Councilman X voted this way on this particular way? What's untruthful about that?
That's a fact. What are you talking about?
Well, if someone, I know that there's an issue here, and we're not going to hide from it, but we also don't have to relitigate it. So let's generalize it a little bit. There's a 3-2 vote. It was contentious. There was a lot of debate. The vote passes or fails, whichever way, whatever side you were on, okay? Some people are happy, some people are unhappy. Council member then takes to Facebook and says, just want to let everyone know, all my followers, these three voted this way, these two voted that way. What Mike's saying is, that's all that ever happened. And that's truthful. There's no dishonesty about it. It's just putting the information that's already publicly available into a different setting, you know, sharing it on social media. But you seem to think, no, actually, there was something disrespectful. There was potentially a lack of honesty. And Mike's saying, what's not honest?
Well, I think we're talking probably about two different things.
Okay.
What he's talking about. To address Mr. Specific, what he's referring to is specific. During the election, or at the polls, he made up a little, for lack of informational poster.
Right.
And on it, he posted the way people voted on certain issues.
Okay.
Factual. It was nothing that wasn't exactly factual in what he said.
Okay.
But people got upset about that because, I guess because he's put the truth out there. But it was nothing, he was nothing deceptive, there was nothing that wasn't correct. It was all factual, and I see nothing wrong with that.
Well, it's politics.
Some of what he's talking about,
go ahead.
Of what you're talking about is, and not all of it, but certain one portion of it was, I was responsible for it. He and I've come to terms with that. It was one misguided social media post.
Okay.
And the rest of it I don't know about, but it shouldn't have been done, but I did it and I own it.
Okay. That's constructive.
And we're okay. We are perfectly okay.
So,
he's my friend.
So moving forward, mm-hmm. we don't need to relitigate those specifics, but one of the goals for today might be, when we get to this code of ethics, what can we put on paper that would serve as a guide of behavior, not some complicated
right.
16-point, feels like, you know, Congress wrote it and you have to follow it kind of document, but an internal document that you own that says, this is what we expect from one another. And I think it would have to be both sides, right? You have to expect that politics will have politics in it, which means people are going to run against each other, which means people are going to hold people accountable for their voting records. That's politics. However, can it be done in a respectful way, an honest way, right?
Now, my statement was made generally speaking. I wasn't speaking about any.
And that's good. We don't need to get into the specifics. But
I'm talking about going forward.
Going forward, it would be great if we had a general understanding about how we, I'm going to quote Jared here, can be a more unified council that respects one another, is honest with one another, even when we disagree. Sarah, your hand was up.
I want to make the point of clarification because I think one of the things about where the line is, and this is, you know, again, going back to the real thing that happened, is right after the park vote, there was a flyer that was put out, and the flyer took snippets of people's quotes next to their name about their vote. And from a where I sit point of view, I don't think that that's appropriate because there's nothing wrong with saying, council voted this way, here are the ayes, here are the nays, you know, whatever. But once you start taking people's words and putting it on a flyer and you're selectively copying and pasting what people said, you're treading in a really difficult world because you're selecting what you want to say they said. You're not putting everything they said. If somebody voted differently than you, then the answer is, these are the votes, you have any questions, please contact the respective council members. That's a way that you can say the factual thing and still not end up in this place where people end up feeling, like Mr. Higginbotham, that my words were taken out of context, my words were used against me, they selected, it was cherry-picked to make a certain point. And, you know, I understand both sides of that. You know, when the flyer's put together, right. they're going, I'm just using the things they said. And the person whose words were used is going, this is not a fair representation of what I said. And so that's where I think council gets along better if they don't do that.
Yeah, but you can't just say don't do that. Because, number one, you're squelching people's right to speak. And number two, you're never going to write a rule that's going to be accurate enough to say, how many words in the quote do you put on the flyer? And, you know, if you have 6 words, that's not enough. 8 words, yeah, now you have content. In other words, it's going to be very difficult for you to define and then police what constitutes appropriate and inappropriate behavior. We're going to have to think about it much more in terms of mutual respect. Okay? So, if someone uses a cherry-picked quote out of context in order to create an impression that is false, I'm just going to say this, you are a liar. Might be that the words you used were technically true, but you have intentionally misled Amen. The recipient of that communication. Yes. That's how we define a lie. A lie is any intentional attempt to mislead someone about the meaning or content of what you've communicated. At the same time, if you're on the losing end of this, you ran for frickin' office. I mean, what do you expect? fact. I mean, this is, you're a politician now. People are going to use your words when they're trying to make a political point. So I think on the one hand, if you are intentionally trying to mislead the public, you're a bad actor. Stop. On the other hand, y'all have to grow a thick skin too, because this is the world you chose. And part of the world you chose is that people are going to misunderstand you, and they're not going to like you, and that they're going to take an hour out of your day at Kroger, and you're going to have, I mean, you're just going to have to deal with that. So I agree with your sentiment that we need to be, your sentiment, we need to be respectful of each other, your sentiment, we need to be a unified team, we need to be honest. I agree with all of that. I would find it very difficult if we wrote into some sort of guidance document, thou shalt not quote a fellow council member.
I have one thing.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be hard to control all of this, but the main thing I think we should do as council members is look at our own self and decide, who am I? Because for me, you said, what did I expect? I didn't expect this. I didn't know anything about politics. I'm being real.
Welcome to the pool.
I'm a Christian. I came on as a Christian. I didn't come on as a politician. So I didn't have a clue. Now I was like hitting the head with a hammer. You know, but we, as the council, we have to look at ourselves and decide, who am I? What is my ethics? What is my morals? What type of human being am I? Do I have to hit below the belt to be who I am? Do I have to belittle my brother that's on the same council with me so I can look good? No. I want to stand on my own achievements, my own train of thought. I'm not going to put you down. I'm not going to put you down or you down. And you can ask them, I've never did it. I stand up on for me. I don't feel like I have to knock you down so I can be seen.
I agree. And I think that people need to be respectful of one another. I think the problem here is going to be that what one person feels as person A knocking person B down, the other person might see as communicating facts for the voters. Whether you perceive that you've been knocked down or not, I've communicated your record. I mean, that's not a personal attack on you. That's just restatement of fact, as Mike would say. So we're gonna work through this. In fact, we're gonna take a break in a minute, and then we're gonna really push forward. This, I didn't intend for this to take quite this long. We're gonna push forward on some material to get to where you want to be. About what does it actually look like to be a responsible, respectful member of town council? Okay, we all want to be that. My guess is there's no one who ran for office because you wanted to screw the world. You're all acting on the basis of a good intention. You all believe that the votes you cast, you're casting because you believe that they are going to advance the interests of the community. Step number one for Andre, what you're talking about, is recognizing in every other person that whether you agree with them or disagree with them, they acted the way they did because they thought it was right.
I don't think that's accurate.
I think that, I mean, I served for a dozen years with people on council where we voted against each other on tons of issues. I never once thought that he was not doing what he was doing because he thought it was better for the people. Now, I think he was wrong about it, right? I mean, I and so if anyone would ask me, hey, what do you think about so-and-so's vote? I'd say, well, I voted a different way. I think that was a mistake. I think we should do it this way. But what I would never say is, he's out for himself. He's got a buddy who wants a business, and so he's just trying to get this through. In other words, no personal attack.
I don't think we have any of that.
Well, that's great. I think that's what you're asking for. You want to live in a world where you're not belittling each other, where you're not making personal attacks, but you have to live in a world where you also disagree with one another, and that's a healthy thing. I would say that if you never had a 3-2 vote, if everything were unanimous, that would not be the sign of healthy government.
No.
All right, let's take a break. We got to pick up the pace. I didn't expect to take quite that long. Oh, Mike.
Let me just bring up one thing. One thing that I have learned is in the one of the events that we just spoke of is after a vote, I made a flyer. There was a vote. People who came to council stormed out. They were, they were my guys, and after they were gone, I had to ask each one of the voters, why did you vote the way you did? And so they didn't hear it. So I made a flyer, and some of it was tongue-in-cheek, and I gave it to them. And somebody thought it was pretty neat, took a picture of it, and put it on Facebook. I have learned my lesson.
Well, I'm impressed, both with Ken and Mike, for saying, you know what, I did this thing and I own it, and probably wouldn't do it the same way again.
Oh, no.
Okay, so that's actually a very positive experience. So now in your spirit, I think we'd have to say, I take you at your word, okay? So I don't hate you. I don't think you're an evil, awful person. You've told me you did it, and you wouldn't do it again the same way again. That's not to say you would never disagree, and you would never communicate the basis of your disagreement, but that was probably not the wisest way to handle it. I think then you'd have to say, okay, so let's move forward. What could we put on paper? It can't be as specific as you can never quote another council member. Okay? In the middle of a debate, I would very likely say, hey, wait a minute, Jared. Just 5 minutes ago, you said blah, 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 and now you're saying such and such. Like, how do you square these two things? I have to be able to have a debate, which means holding people accountable for the things they actually say. At the same time, I should not attempt to misrepresent. I should not make it a personal attack. So we need to figure out what we can say on paper to communicate that expectation.
Ken Watts taught me one of the most important lessons of being on council. When I first came in, he told me, he said, we battle it out in here, from anger, whatever, but once we leave this building, we leave it in here.
I think that...
You get no better than that. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah, that's the best advice you can give us.
That might end up being something we actually write on this sheet, would be, debates stay in council chambers, we'll do some wordsmithing, but basically there's a context in which we have our arguments, and it should not spill over. That could be the beginnings of a statement.
I don't want to have a debate and a vote in the council meeting, then when I go to the post office, give them mail, I see my picture up there with the warning poster.
He did that.
Yeah, I don't want that either, but I will tell you, just get used to it. I mean, because even if everyone else on council is entirely respectful, I was shocked at how neighbors, people that I like have barbecues with, would write the most scathing emails. What an idiot, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, I know you. I mean, do you really think
about you?
That I was trying to be mean when I cast this vote? I mean, you want to hear my side? It's amazing. Even if everyone here does it perfectly.
That's computer bravery.
Well, it is, especially if it's anonymous.
Right, that's all it is.
Yeah.
But even if it's not anonymous, I mean, there's a certain something by being able to do it.
They would never say it to your face. But they'll put it on a
right.
Yeah. All right, maybe that's another thing to put on our little guide for behavior. Don't put anything in writing that you wouldn't be willing to say to their face. That might be the rule. Yeah.
Janice Wheaton and I do not throw rolls at each other in a restaurant. Outside, she's got a Labrador Retriever, I got a Labrador Retriever. We can talk Labrador Retrievers
all day long.
In the meetings,
what the hell are you talking about?
All right. So I am heartened. I am happy to hear that you are all basically on the same page about what it is that you want to see. And you share the same attitudes. The question is going to be, how do we systematize that? Especially if new council members come on. What should the orientation look like when someone who has never been involved in politics gets onto a local governing body? And I got to tell you right now, the flip side of this, and I'm preempting something I'm going to say later, is also understanding the role of local government. So worrying about federal issues over which you have zero control, worrying about state issues, which in a Dillon rule state you very likely have zero control over, injecting those sorts of debates into what you do on the local level is also dangerous. So party politics becomes difficult on the local level. And that's something we can address. Do you identify yourself first as a member of a political party that has a national following, or do you identify yourself as a member of the town council of Amherst? Now, you can have your political identity, that's fine, but which is the first priority? We'll talk about that. Let's take a break. And then I've got some more stuff I want to do. Let's go almost 10 minutes. Let's start up again at 11 o'clock.